Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Teaching History Her Way podcast. My name is Cherilyn Amendola, and I am your host. I'm really glad that you're with us today. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. I hope you'll keep coming back. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. I am extra super glad that you are here. I have a wonderful guest today. If you are interested in books that are empowering and in particular empowering for your female students, you are definitely going to want to stay with us today. And I also want to mention to our elementary teachers that are listening, this one is a really good one for you because this book is perfect for elementary classrooms and high school classrooms alike. So today with me, I have Sheetal Shah. I am very, very excited to have found her on Instagram. She wrote a beautiful book called Shakti Girls, and she is a former educator who taught world history in all girls' schools, where she was reminded how curriculum and literature inclusive of women from diverse backgrounds can have a positive impact on girls' self-esteem, identity development, and belonging. So one of the themes that we take a look at in the show quite a bit. Sheetal also developed and led numerous educator workshops, presenting at national conferences covering topics on pedagogy and diversity and inclusion. Sheetal currently lives in Atlanta, Georgia with her family while pursuing her writing and mission to bring diversity to bookshelves with stories that inspire. Shakti Girls is her inspiring debut. Sheetal, welcome to the Teaching History Her Way podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for that welcoming introduction. I'm really excited to be here today.
Well, I'm really excited about your book. So friends who are listening today, Shakti Girls has wonderful content and beautiful illustrations and some really great activities at the end of the book that you can use with your classes or even with your own children if you have them or nieces, nephews. It's a great book across the board. So I'm excited to bring it to you today. So Sheetal, can you explain to the audience what Shakti means? Because the title of your book is Shakti Girls, and you have a page about Shakti in the book, and why that particular word inspired your book.
Yeah, absolutely. So Shakti, in its most simplest definition, means power, it means force, it means energy in Hindi, which is the dominant language of India. And it's where I'm from, where my parents both they were born in India and they immigrated to the United States in the 1970s. I was born in the US. And so Shakti is really about like your inner power, your inner energy that you have within you. And it can manifest and appear in a lot of different ways, right? And it's unique to every individual. So, you know, I've always believed that everyone is born with a unique gift to give to the world. And so everyone is born with Shakti within them. And it can manifest as your intellect. It can manifest as, you know, a talent like juggling or swimming or art, or it can also manifest in your nature, like your loving nature, your compassion and empathy with others. So it can appear in a lot of different ways, and it's unique to its individual. And so I thought of this word. It's actually a word that I didn't quite grow up with. I knew what it was in terms of Hinduism, right? There are goddesses. There's a goddess named Shakti, and there are other goddesses that embody Shakti in Hinduism. But in its, you know, more of its secular definition as empowerment and as in your inner energy, I never really paid much attention to it until I was in my 20s, and my roommate had shared with me that her middle name was Shakti. And I paused, because up until that moment, I thought everyone's middle name was their father's name. So like with, you know, Indian tradition, from the region of the world of India that I'm from, it was tradition for every child to take on the middle name of their father to kind of continue sort of the lineage, the patriarchal, more of it that leaned on more of a patriarchal side. And so when I had found that my friend here had a name that was specifically given to her by the name of Shakti, a very empowering word, I was pretty much blown away. I was like, I couldn't even imagine what it would have been felt like to grow up with my identity associated with a word that is so empowering. And so since then, I kind of held on to the word Shakti, and I've sort of perseverated on it for, you know, for many years, especially as I navigated like my teaching career, and especially early on when you come across your first challenges, managing a classroom, figuring out how to manage your curriculum and things like that, and then later having kids of my own. You know, I've really leaned on that word Shakti and how I personally felt like I could connect to it. And so it was like a source of empowerment for me. So when it came time to write this book and I was ready to write it, it was really a matter of, like, within seconds, I knew I wanted to call the book Shakti Girls. Even then, I had a lot of self-doubt. I'm like, oh, I should probably go through the process of, you know, brainstorming a whole ton of other names and things like that. But I came back to Shakti Girls because all of the women in this book, they all embody Shakti and they all demonstrate it to the world in different ways. And so I really wanted to show children that you've got Shakti too, and it can show in different ways that's true to who you are.
And I think that's what got me about your book from the very opening page. So Shakti Girls opens with a page that is titled Shakti, the power and energy within you. And as I read the definition that Sheetal put in the book, I thought it was so interesting and also even empowering for me to read that this word that means power can mean power in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And the book does such a great job of bringing in different types of women who represent Shakti in different ways that I felt powerful just reading it. And I was also thinking about my students, no matter their gender, who are reading this book, and mm-hmm. and like SEL lessons that could go with it also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, each woman, they have their own story of like perseverance. They have their own story of resilience. And so I think stories that, like, you know, children and adults can connect to on a lot of different levels, whether or not you are interested in the same thing that industry in which that person's from, there are stories that each individual could connect to.
And not only did you choose a lot of different types of women, you chose artists, you chose corporate women, you chose scientists, and that's just three categories of many. You also wrote the book in a really accessible form. So this book is written in poetry. So your students who are just learning to read and your students who need a way into a conversation about Indian women can both use this book as a resource.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. It was my younger son who actually inspired me to write in rhyming poetry. So when I had first started thinking about writing this book, my son was 6 years old at the time. I think he was around six. And we bring in all kinds of biographies into the house. I mean, history teacher here, of course I'm going to do that. And so I'm trying to read and expose my six-year-old to these like inspiring and remarkable stories of individuals from all around the world and all throughout history. And he's bored. And so when I started talking to him about writing this book, you know, he had said something like, and I'm kind of taking it, you know, out of context, well, kind of paraphrasing what he said was, can you write it like Llama Llama? Can you write it like, you know, the books that he enjoys that have that rhyming, sing-songy sound? And when he said that, that got me thinking, like, if I'm trying to really target, you know, trying to engage younger readers to, you know, with these stories of inspiration and give them a window into a world of unsung heroes, then yeah, I have to make it engaging. I have to make it fun to read. And so I decided to write it in poetry, which wasn't easy, but I thought it was important to give it a shot.
Yeah. And I love how it is in couplets. So it makes it nice. It makes nice little chunks for developing readers. And then another thing that Sheetal does that's really brilliant is at the end of the poem, sort of towards the bottom, if there is a word in Hindi or an English word that is a little difficult, she defines it for the students as well. So as I'm going through, I know what the word aeronautics means, but I don't necessarily know what nidar means in Hindi, because I've been exposed to the language. So it was really, really helpful.
Yeah, and it was really important to me that the illustrator who I worked with, Gavita Roach, but so incredibly talented and really dedicated to this project, that we made that space on that page for each page that the glossary was on each page of every poem, so that there was uninterrupted reading. I wanted the experience to be seamless for children going through the book.
Goal reached. Great job.
Thanks.
So obviously representation is important to you. And on the Teaching History Her Way podcast, one of the core philosophies of this show is that representation matters. So why do you think representation should be important to educators, and how can they use your book to drive a philosophy of representation matters?
Yeah, so most of my upbringing, I grew up in the suburbs of New York, and so for 80s and 90s, most of my upbringing, I didn't really see myself in the curriculum I was taught, and so I really didn't see myself in a curriculum until I reached college, and it was a South Asian diaspora class that I took, and it was really the first time where I felt seen, where I felt heard, where I felt like my experience in history was validated. And I remember that moment where I was like, oh my gosh, like I really never knew what this felt like to be part of a curriculum, to be part of America's story. Up until then, I think I subconsciously felt like an outlier to the story or an exception. And so that experience was really profound. I'll never forget it. And I also remember feeling like that class was easy. And it wasn't easy because there was less work or because, I was naturally good at it or for any of those reasons, but it was because I was probably most engaged in that class than I was in any of the other classes I had taken. And I think it's because I saw myself in that curriculum. And so when I became a teacher, I hung on to that experience, and it really made me think about when I go to build my curriculum, how do I include identities and backgrounds of my students, right? Really taking a look, taking stock of who's in my classroom, who's listening, and who's being impacted by what I teach. And I discover that not only does it impact their sense of self-worth and esteem, but they also feel safe, valued, and celebrated in my classroom. I also felt like my relationship with my student grew stronger because I was bringing them into their curriculum. And any educator knows that your relationship with your student makes a profound impact on their academic performance. So all of that makes a huge difference. But then it also benefits everyone. So those students, who may not share that background or that heritage, it gives them a window into a world outside of their own. So it builds their compassion and empathy. It gives them a new perspective, appreciation and knowledge of diversity. So really preparing them for the real world when they go out there and they have to be leaders themselves, and breaks down stereotypes, that they have existing in their mind, whether they're aware of it or not. Especially for boys, reading about women and achievements of girls and women helps break down their stereotypes and notions of what girls are able to achieve. And so I remember this one particular time I was in a conference with a student. So I was her world studies teacher, and I was also her advisor. So, and our conferences were student-led. And it was me, her father, and the student, and I was the only person of color in the room. And the father asked the student, "You used to love world studies. Why don't you love it anymore right now?" And the student responded, she's a white student, and she responded, "Right now we're studying the Enlightenment, and it's basically all about white men." And I sat there as her teacher, teaching her this curriculum, thinking, oh, I need to do better. Here is a student who is thirsty for access to a world outside of her own, and I'm doing her a disservice. So I took that feedback and I was like, I need to do digging because it's not the textbook that's provide the textbook's not giving me the information I need. So now I need to go do the research myself. So that was really a profound moment in my career.
I have found over the course of my career that the changes that I've made that have been some of the best changes have had a student as the catalyst.
Yeah. I mean, also to give them a voice in the curriculum is incredibly empowering for them and makes them more engaged learners.
Absolutely. And that's beyond student choice. That's them telling you what they need to fill their bucket and then figuring out how to do it.
You know, and the world is changing rapidly, and the students today, they're more aware and engaged of what's going on than ever before. And as a teacher, it's hard to keep up. So we should be leaning on our students to guide us in what they will need to know as they navigate this really complex world.
I 100% agree with you on that point. So with that, you made a lot of choices about who you were going to include in your book and who you weren't. And forgive me if I pronounced the name incorrectly, but I got drawn to Kasturba Gandhi immediately because we do an entire unit on Gandhi in India. And I don't teach that unit, but a very long time ago I did, and her name never came up. She might now, so I'm going to check in with my teachers. But I thought she was my favorite one in the book. And it is very difficult to choose a favorite person in this book because everyone is very cool. But I didn't know about her. I'm going to delete that entire silent part.
It's okay. That's the beauty of podcasting. You can edit.
I didn't know about her contributions to resistance and how deep they went until I read your couplets, which I think is also pretty profound.
I'm so glad you mentioned her because I was going to bring her up. She's my favorite as well because she is an unsung hero in the independence movement, you know, at least in what we share and teach about about India's independence movement in the Western world. I think in India, you know, she is somewhat well known, maybe not the most prominent figure in that movement, but definitely well known. But Kasturba Gandhi was the wife of Mahatma Gandhi. And she was the inspiration of his philosophies in his approach to you know, resisting colonization, right? And to you know, put it, you know, fighting for freedom, right? In a nonviolent way. And so she was the inspiration around ahimsa, which is nonviolence, and satyagraha, which is, you know, really advocacy and speaking the truth. To fight an injustice. And so, yeah, if it wasn't for her, who knows what would have come of not only of India's independence movement, but also the civil rights movement. And so she has a significant influence and all of that. So yeah, it was time to highlight her. And you know, she didn't have a formal education. She didn't know how to read and write, but she was incredibly skilled at using her voice to garner support for the freedom movement by engaging with other women. So really bringing women into the freedom movement through marches, through advocacy, through boycotts. They played a huge role, and it was in large part because of her.
That's incredible, especially because our students study both the civil rights movement and the freedom movement in India. So making that connection and also making that connection through her is just another really wonderful way to bring women's history and Indian women's history into our curriculum. And that's kind of the fun part about representation matters, because there are so many connections that you can make between people that once you start doing it, once you get the ball rolling, it almost turns out to be not that hard, because you have this question of who's missing. And then they become easy to uncover as soon as you recognize that someone is always missing.
Yes, absolutely. And you start to notice a ripple effect too. Like, Okay, so this person was missing, but then this person, like just the ripple effect of their impact and the influence on the greater world is pretty exciting too.
I agree. So, how did you choose the women who appear in your book?
Yeah, that was really hard because once I started doing the research, and it took some time to do the research. Google was my friend, but then I also asked family members who had studied, who had grown up in India, who had gone through schooling there, who they knew about. I also, looked up interviews, listened to podcasts. So I looked at a lot of different resources, and the list of women that I discovered in the process became quite lengthy. And it was exciting. Also, I felt sad at the same time that there wasn't a lot of attention paid, or I didn't know who they were until I started doing the research. But also exciting that there were so many stories still to be shared with the world. And I narrowed down the list, really just wanting to make sure I had a diversity of regions covered because India is so incredibly diverse with languages, religions, and so on. And so I wanted to make sure that there was a diversity of representation within the country itself. I also wanted to make sure that there was diversity of generations represented in the book. So there were women who born and raised and still live or lived in India till their death. Women that, born and raised in India and then immigrated over, women that were our second generation Indian Americans. So I wanted to make sure that we had women represented from these different generations so that children could connect to, can find someone that they connect with, in different ways. And then I couldn't, and then I definitely wanted women represented from different backgrounds and different industries. So women from arts, politics, science, math. And that was really important to me because I wanted children to see that society doesn't, should not tell you what you can or cannot do. You can aspire to, and follow your natural interests, just like how these women did. And then some of the women in the book I felt personally connected to. Jhumpa Lahiri is one in particular that I wrote about. She is the author, Interpreter of Maladies, Pulitzer Prize winner. And it was her book, Interpreter of Maladies. It was the first book I read written by a South Asian author where I felt like I saw myself in the pages of the book. And she just had a, you know, she's an inspiration to me. A large part of why I finally felt the confidence to write this book and get it out into the world. And so I wanted to honor her by including her in this book. So it was like a mix of, reasons, but really having like diverse representation was sort of the biggest way in which I was able to narrow it down. There are a lot more women that I want to write about though, so I'm not done.
Awesome. We'll be waiting for book two.
I
Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with our audience today?
I always think about the quote by tennis player Billie Jean King that you have to see it in order to be it, and sort of the power of diverse representation for young children and being able to see role models that they can connect with to help them break barriers and pursue fields that they're passionate about. I also believe that you have to see it also to believe it, to believe that anything is possible for anyone and that there is just immense power in that. And so yeah, and so that really, I think inspires me to continue doing what I want to do and inspire children with these diverse stories.
And we in our classrooms are committed to doing that. I hadn't drawn upon Billie Jean King before, but that's a really great quote that kind of tells the story of what we do.
Yeah.
So where can we purchase Shakti Girls?
Sure. So you can purchase it on Amazon. It is also available on my website, sheetal-shaw.com. You can also find it on barnesandnobles.com.
That is awesome. And if you'd like to stay in touch with Sheetal or have any other questions, she is on Instagram at sheetal.shaw.writes. So I will put all of this in the show notes for you so that you can get a copy of the book. You can follow her on Instagram. You can check out her website. 100% worth your time. And I am so glad that you consider the Teaching History Her Way podcast a 100% worth your time. Let's try that again. And I am so glad that you consider the Teaching History Her Way podcast 100% worth your time. Thank you, audience, for being here. Sheetal, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about your book.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
And friends, if you are interested in getting in touch with me, you can find me at teachinghistoryherway.com. That's my website. Or you can find me on Twitter at History Her Way, or on Instagram at Teaching History Her Way, or on Facebook, Teaching History Her Way also. I hope you noticed the pattern. Have a lovely and wonderful day, friends out there in audience land, and I will chat with you next time.